Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer. Blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.
From earaches to strep tests, there's MinuteClinic at CVS. See a provider, fill a prescription, and grab essentials. Or see us online with telehealth options. That's healthier made easier. Visit MinuteClinic at CVS today. Services vary by location. See MinuteClinic.com for details.
All right, it's another episode of Film Study. We're still looking back to week 9. I think we would love to look back at week 9 for a long time, but we're going to focus on the offense today. Ken McKusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing well. How many more times have you watched this game as you've been processing the game?
Now? I've been watching it now for fun a couple more times after watching all of the for the analytic reasons. So it's just a wonderful afterglow from this game that'll last for a long time, like you were saying.
Right. All right. Well, joining us today to help look back at this fun game is John Eisenberg. who is the opinion columnist over at BaltimoreRavens.com. He also has a brand new book out called The League about the formation of the NFL. He's also got a book about Cal Ripken's streak that I enjoyed a bunch, and he's doing the podcast over on BaltimoreRavens.com, What Happened to That Guy, which this week talked about Matt Burke. John, how you doing?
Doing great. Good to be with you guys.
All right, very cool. So Matt Burke and his comedy career. Tell us just a little bit about that. Give us a little tease because it's interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody dared him to do it, so he got up on stage and he didn't crash and burn, so he continues to do it. He's doing it strictly for charity. He's sort of an entrepreneur by nature, and he puts together these charities, approach him. He was doing a lot of events, and he said, why don't we do something that's actually fun? So he brings together six or seven comedians, and he's the opening act, and it's just a night of comedy. So when people, instead of writing checks to a charity, they actually get to come to a fun event, and he's putting it together. And, I mean, but, you know, he's getting up on stage and trying stuff out and getting some laughs. And it's you know, people that know him are not the least bit surprised. I mean, as he said, he's sarcastic and, you know, a little witty and a tortured soul, like all good comedians.
Yeah, very, very good. I remember some of the comedic moments, like him basically telling Flacco to run on the field if he thought it was a good idea at the end of Super Bowl 47.
Yeah.
And he did seem to have some of that natural edge to him.
He does. He does. And I explore it in the podcast, and he sort of explains it. And a very interesting guy, super smart guy. Obviously, he went to Harvard and with an economics degree. And as I said in the podcast, I mean, you know, that's a guy that could probably could have become commissioner of the NFL if he'd really pointed himself that way. And instead, he's doing stand-up comedy. So a natural for a Where Are They Now podcast.
Are you going through them alphabetically? Because you had Bowler, you had Bowler, now you've got Burke sticking with the
Bees.
Yeah,
a lot of Bees. No, absolutely not doing anything alphabetically. It's all just happenstance. My next one I will drop is Chris Carr, back to it now. He's an immigration attorney now. So I spent Friday. He's an immigration attorney. So I spent Friday with him in immigration court. It's quite a tale.
That actually sounds very cool. So big interception in the Ravens, one of the Ravens' big wins against the Patriots in that 2009 AFC wild card game that they went in there and kicked the Patriots' ass. You mentioned Matt Burke before. Matt Burke kind of broke the offensive line scoring model when he was here because he set a standard that was too high, and I based a lot of the standard levels of what you need for an A, B, a C at center by much higher grades than any center since has been getting. So it's I've had to lower that standard a couple times since to kind of make the grades make sense. But Burke was just an amazing center in terms of how he scored when he was here.
Yeah, what's amazing about that's the end of his career. I mean, he's in his mid-30s at that point, not in his prime really, but still really good.
In his first year with the Ravens, I believe it was his first and not his second, but his first year with the Ravens, the PFF made him the 22nd best player in all of football by their grading. So pretty high. And he was consistently scoring A's as I scored the offensive line that season.
Yeah.
I want to start with some offensive line play, if that's okay with you, John. I'll kind of go through this and feel free to chime in at whatever point you'd like, but I'll certainly give you a chance at the end of every player. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right, so to start with Ronnie Stanley at left tackle. He did a great job of keeping Lamar upright in this game. He didn't have any time where the defender was actually able to get their hands on Lamar, although he did get pushed into Lamar one time. Another time, Lamar had a ball thrown off his helmet. That was a pressure as well. 1.5 total for the game. Those were his only negative scores. He ended up with an A, the only Ravens offensive lineman in this game who scored one. So another solid game for Stanley. He's now had 7 A or B games since the opening game when he had 2 holding penalties and had a D. Making his name and certainly on his way to a very big contract.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're maybe looking at a Pro Bowl appearance there, or certainly getting that sort of recognition, and just incredibly consistent. I mean, I think the Ravens have been waiting to see this from him. Very high draft pick, 6 overall, and a lot of the guys ahead of him have had outstanding careers, and it's not that Ronnie hasn't. He's been very good. But I think they were looking for that next level, and he's pretty much said this. So I think they're really pleased to see him get to that next level. It's really important part of what's happening with that offense this year.
Right.
He's really taken over as the guy in that offensive line for Yanda in some respects.
Yeah. And the second half of his rookie year, he was similarly outstanding. In fact, he might have even been a little better than he has been so far this year. But he's had a couple injury plagued years in a row where he's been slowed down. He's been a warrior. He's stayed out there when he's hurt, kept going back into games limping. I mean, it's the worst possible thing you can think of to have Stanley hurt. But boy, the guy's been playing some great ball when he's been in there this year. Okay, we'll move on to Bozeman here. He had a difficult game. He had his best game of the year against Seattle. Took a step back again in this one with a bunch of pressures. They did take some liberties with the A-gap, and I kind of suspected they might try some stunts through there because Skura and Bozeman have had the weakness in terms of pass blocking and picking up stunts in particular. Vinovich beat him one time with a bull rush. We had two other times he was beaten, once by bull rush and once to the outside. Scored 0.69 as a raw score after adjustment. That's a D. One of the things that's been nice about Bozeman this year so far is that he's pulled effectively. 7 of 10 in this game, not a great game. He did get obstructed once, 5 blocks in level 2, 4 pancakes. And he seems to take more joy in delivering pancake blocks than just about anybody on the line. Even Brown, I think he's probably slightly ahead of him in pancake blocks for the year, although I haven't checked it so far. But Bozeman needs to pick it up if he's going to keep that position.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure who's going to replace him. It was an open tryout situation in training camp. I don't think they were really happy with anybody. Traded Illuminor, and to me, unbelievably, there was another pick involved, but they got a 4th-round draft pick for him, which that's like the trade of the year, if you ask me. I don't know how you get a 4th-round draft pick for that guy, but well done there by Eric DaCosta. But so I don't know. I mean, Bozeman does need to pick it up. I don't know what plan B is. Powers is, not really, he's not been up on most games. And so, they put James Hurst back in there, I guess would be it. They seem determined to make him the insurance, the Ryan Flaherty, so to speak, playing all the positions. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it appears to me they're going to stick with him. I'm not seeing or hearing that, there are going to be some ups and downs, but I think he's in there to stay.
Well, with you in the building, I was kind of trying to hear any inside information you might have about what's going on with Powers in practice and whether they're liking what they're seeing or he still needs more time in the weight room or whatever. He hasn't been active, as you mentioned. Makari is there, and honestly, Makari did not look impressive to me in the preseason, but they obviously like him enough or like his versatility enough that they've kept him on the active game day roster. I don't understand it. I think it's kind of an indictment of what's happening with Powers, honestly, because yeah. Bozeman can play center just as well as Skura can, but he can play center also. So you'd have multiple options there if you had an injury at either position.
Well, I wish I had some insight for you there. The reality is there's a pretty big wall up between digital media and the football side. If anything, we hear less. They're pretty careful about that stuff. And I just don't hear a whole lot. I think it's a very good question. Powers, I mean, a 4th-round draft pick. You would think, I mean, this is what Bozeman is, a 6th-rounder, I believe.
That's right.
In his second year ahead of him. I mean, 4th-round draft pick on the offensive line. They like to see those guys play pretty quickly, and it certainly doesn't appear to be so. Something is going on there. I wish I had more inside information, but they obviously do not like something.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Matt Skura continued a very consistent season. He's had all 8 games that he's played have been within a very tight scoring range. He hasn't had any extreme grades, no A or F so far this year. Had 3 minor charges in this game. Only one of them was a full pressure. B in this game, which was one of his higher scores, a point off his top. 6 blocks in level 2 was good. He had a couple highlights that really looked nice in terms of combination block. I'm very happy with who Scurry is at this point. And I think the rest of Baltimore seems to not – this is a common thing that happens with offensive linemen, John, is people get polar with them. They're either the greatest thing ever or they're terrible. Or they get roller skated back into the quarterback on every play. And just neither extreme is really true, generally speaking. Marshall Yanda is capable of an occasional trip to the bathroom. And, you know, Gino Gradkowski didn't give up a sack on every play. So yeah, this somewhere in between is the truth there. And Matt Scurry, honestly, I think he's taken a step forward this year. And next year, he's probably going to earn a very good living at this game in free agency, right, after next year.
Yeah, I believe so. And I would say I'm with you. I mean, I think fans should be pleased with the level he's playing. Believe me, we'd know if it was not going well. And there would be big problems. And I think you also have to give Scurry some credit for – you know, one thing, how many pre-snap penalties are we seeing this year? Very few.
Yeah.
I think less than in prior years. And so just the whole line is functioning pretty well.
And yeah, it gets a great point.
You're not hearing about communication issues, which, you know, is always to me sort of a buzzword for something else. But, you know, you're just not hearing the sort of the old bugaboos. And the center is the guy running the show up there. So, you know, you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, a lot of that missed assignment stuff is bad. You know, the other thing, the Ravens run a power run offense. So they pull guards a lot in Roman's offense. You cannot afford to have a center with sloppy footwork that trips up either guard on the way through. The thing I've been doing recently, and I hate to bash an old Raven like this because he was a good guy who's around for a long time, but Mike Flynn had very bad footwork. And he would step on Bowler's foot a lot, and he would trip up the guard from time to time, and it just was not a positive thing. And I'm looking at the 2006 season. It's at the end of his career. He's got one more year after that. But it's just shockingly different to watch Scurry's footwork versus Flynn's footwork in that year.
Well, Scurry's self-made. I mean, listen, this is undrafted free agent. He comes to the team with a lot of holes, a lot of question marks. Not good enough to get drafted coming out of college, so... a lot to work on for sure. The Ravens have done a pretty good job of that with a lot of guys, not necessarily undrafted. Well, some undrafted guys, but not high draft picks. They have found functioning offensive linemen. It's organizationally, I think, one of the better things they've done through a number of different line coaches. And you can really go back, you know, almost to the 90s or, you know, the 2000s. There's a long history here of guys. And they may not be Pro Bowlers, but they're solid. And they've always been able to coach these guys up and get value from some guys. And Scurry would be certainly an example. Hurst is another one the fans hate. And, you know, Hurst is certainly not a world beater, but he has stepped in a lot of situations. That's another undrafted free agent. I mean, there's a long list of them.
Right. There certainly have been a bunch of them, and they've gotten tremendous economy in terms of who they've drafted the position. They got a Hall of Famer in the third round. They got a guy who was not good enough to play on this team, Chris Chester, who went to the NFC and had a fantastic career with the Redskins. Just a great career. But he was logjammed behind three guys who all belong to the Pro Bowl in Burke, Grubbs, and Yanda here. That, you know, what chance is he going to get except as a sixth lineman? It's a overflow of riches, an embarrassment of riches that they had. Anyway, let's move on. Marshall Yanda, we expect him to get an A every week. A B this week had a half a sack I charged him with, as well as a pressure and a penetration. Worked out to be in the moderate B range there at 0.86 after adjustment. Two blocks in level two. He did have one pancake made of one of two poles. Two really nice highlight blocks in this game. And some people would look at the B here I gave him and say, but look at the run blocks he made, and they sprung the back end of Ingram's long runs and this and that. And it's true, but the truth of the matter is that pass blocking errors are more significant, and that's why I charge more heavily for them. You got more win probability on the line on those plays. So, you know, Marshall, it's actually his second worst game of the year as I haven't scored at this B.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I would say there's been an ever so slight ebbing, and you certainly got the numbers and everything just a little bit, right? Would you not say, you know, from the absolute high level that he has always attained, just a little bit less maybe this year? But it's still a high level. It's still a very high level, and, you know, the Ravens are not going to complain. aside from how he plays and blocks, I mean, you know, he does so much. He runs the show. He runs that room. He sets the tone. You know, if Ronnie Stanley is standing over there with a sore finger or whatever, or something that's bothering him, you know, you take one look at Marshall Yanda and it's like, well, you're not going to be sitting out because of that injury. You're getting back in the game. And so he still provides huge value in that room.
Okay, so you're in the building. Maybe you get a little taste of this. Giannis having a great season, and he's clearly enjoying it in terms of something. We saw him lifting up DaCosta off the ground and flipping him around, and we've seen some of the other stuff in terms of him on the sideline reacting to Lamar's "Let's go for it," you know, and being frankly a terrific leader to react that way to Lamar. And Lamar knew to ask if they wanted to go for it. He asked Yanda. Yanda said, "Hell yeah, you want to go for it? We're going for it." The thing I really want to know is Giannis signed a 2-year deal, but he kind of made it clear before this year that he would decide at the end of the year whether he's going to play that second year or not, or possibly it could be a series of 1-year extensions like we saw with Mason and Reed, I think, at the end of their careers, trying to keep him around for an extra year at a time. But eventually they're going to let him leave for the last year and have additional prorated bonus money. So the question I'd have for you is, do you think Giannis is more likely than not to play in 2020?
I think he's probably more likely than not, as you just said. I think it's more likely that he does play, simply because, I mean, we're only halfway through the season, so let's see what happens. I am not hearing or seeing that he's having injury issues, which he's had a lot of them. And so I think more than anything, when a player gets into his mid-30s, that's what wears him down. I mean, the fans or media, a lot of us, you know, we look at performance and grade those things. But really, what really weighs on players, I think, is the grind of playing, regardless of performance. And they always feel they can go out there. But if it gets to be really, really difficult and they're playing through a lot, it just gets old and it gets tiring. And Marshall has done that already for a number of years, far worse than this year. So he's one of these guys at age 34, 35, seems to be a little bit healthier. So, and it's a running offense. He's like waited his whole career for this. Mm-hmm. So I don't see him fleeing the scene.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I mean, he's probably one of the most important players to be back for 2020, given the Ravens' interior line is not all set at this point.
No.
All right, let's move on. Orlando Brown, we've been loving him. And for a year and a half of Orlando Brown, we've been enjoying, you know, what he's been bringing to the table here. And had another good game against the Patriots here. He did allow a penetration that blew up a play and actually impeded a pull by Bozeman. Allowed 2 half pressures and 1 and a third quarterback hits. He was the only one to allow a full quarterback hit in this game. Works out to be kind of a low B overall in terms of his grade adjusted up. And 5 blocks in level 2, that's obviously a place where it's not easy for him. He doesn't have the mobility of some of the guards, or Skura for that matter, or Stanley, to get into level 2 and make blocks, but he occasionally has to. And when he does, he's can make them as well. He had 1 pancake in this game. I'm just very pleased with what they've gotten. I think they've gotten a better pass blocker than they really had the right to expect coming out of school. The word on him, in addition to all the combine stats, was sloppy feet. Yeah. And so he would cross his feet and he wouldn't be able to use his length properly and whatnot. But we've seen completely the opposite. He's absorbed people with the bull rush and he's pushed them past that back pylon of the pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've gotten I think they hope they took him in the third round. I mean, this year you take Jalen Ferguson in the third round and, you know, he's on the field. I mean, you hope you will get a player that can be a starter for the next few years. Whether you're going to get him as a rookie, as a starter, or as really hit or miss, they've had him since the start of his career here. Probably gotten more. What I'm saying is more than they expected from him.
Yeah.
And so there's plenty of upside still for him to go. Plenty of room for him to get better. I think he can be in better physical shape and. There's a lot to work on with him, but he's just so darn big and his footwork has been good, as you say. So, that's just a huge thing that they took a flyer on this guy and they found the right tackle. And, And so it's really, really helped solidify this line, because that was a position where they were shuffling through some guys. And, you know, so it's really been a nice thing for the offense and for a running offense.
I score only the Ravens games, and then I look at PFF to compare other players. And one of the things that, you know, we've had other guests point out is just how few good right tackles there are in the league right now. There's kind of a, what do you call it, a whirlpool drawing right the good right tackles to play left tackle for most teams. And so at right tackle, there aren't as many good players. I mean, Marcus Cannon is a good player with the Patriots, who they just saw in this game, but they don't have there's not a wealth of these guys. You know, there's maybe 12 or 15 players playing right tackle in the entire NFL who are somewhat good at it, and Brown is one of those. So it's really nice to have a guy that's at least in the top half of his position in the league.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting, and you could probably answer this as well, having studied the film like you did, on that game Sunday night, I got the feeling that the outside rush from those guys, the Patriots were determined to sort of contain Lamar, and you know, maybe they were going to rush, but they were also wanted to stay in their gaps and their lanes and not let him get outside of them. So I don't know if that impacted how the blocking was done or not. You know, sometimes I didn't feel like they were just an all-out rush. They were more determined to contain Lamar and maybe let the blitzers do the pressures.
Yeah, that's a real good point. So you don't always green light every pass rusher, and you force them to play two gaps and stand up their opponent. And there was some of that. I think that's an accurate depiction of it. And also when Lamar goes to the mesh, the responsibilities of that outside rusher immediately change, because their first concern is Lamar coming outside of me and going to beat me? I have to make that read correctly on that ball. And that's just so much of what Lamar adds to this offense, is when he goes to the mesh, it freezes players on the edge and opens up the middle unbelievably for that downhill run game.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's so effective right now. I mean, there's a lot, you got to do a lot of guessing.
Yeah.
And, I actually thought the Patriots did a pretty good job of containing him, sort of, and maintaining their gaps, especially on some of the designed runs and those passes where he pivoted around and went outside.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't. Those could have been runs. I mean, I didn't. It didn't matter. It did matter. They did a pretty good job on him, but I still think he still made plays, which is really, really a testament to him. I mean, he still found room in between that, but they were determined to keep him inside and really funnel him to the inside, but he still made plays. It's really, really a testament to him.
Right. I agree with what you're saying there. And that the overarching theme I felt to Lamar's game was that he was not going to allow the New England secondary to beat the Ravens.
Right.
So the passes were short. His average yards per completion was 2.9 in this game. And that's the air yards on the throw. Mm. Okay. So he had a pitch forward to Brown that went for the longest play. That was probably a negative 5 plus 31 or whatever. It's 26 yard play. But anyway, he had a number of short passes. Ingram took a couple of them for 29 yards that were pretty close to the line of scrimmage in each case. The only pass that he threw over the defense the entire night was the play to Andrews for 18. That was might have been the biggest play of the night to get that first down.
Yeah, he got a little lucky early in that game. There were some tips that he did throw. I mean, those weren't super long passes, but he was throwing them into traffic. And early in the game, I did feel like the New England secondary had the potential to make a difference with some tip balls primarily, and they fell to the ground. So you're living right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There were three of those in the game. So there was two PDs plus one other that's not a PD that went off the helmet of Stanley. And the Patriots coming into this game had 53 passes defensed on the year and 19 interceptions. First of all, lead the league interceptions by 9. But more than that, that ratio of interceptions per PD, because interceptions are a subset of passes defense, is unreal. They're intercepting more than one every three passes that are put up in the air. So you got to be very careful about that. And I thought that was one of the keys to the game, is Lamar limited that to three passes that got knocked up in the air, including the one off Stanley's helmet, which was just exceptional. That was part of his value add in this game, even though he wasn't slinging the ball all over the field as he has in some previous games.
Yeah, I mean, he went through that run of interceptions a couple games ago, and some of those were tips too, and not all his fault. I mean, he's been pretty good on. Some of them were his fault for sure, but it's not been a year of picks, other than that short run. That's a huge thing, just a huge thing for this offense. I mean, part of the reason. I mean, we're all, you know, talking about how well he's playing and all this stuff, but really, first and foremost, ball security. And not turning the ball over, you know, I'm talking about him primarily.
Yes.
He's not fumbling like he did last year at all. I'm not, how many fumbles does he have?
He's zero fumbles lost this year.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just a huge change. And the passing, he's had a little bit of luck, but he's also been pretty careful. So that's just a major thing, the offense keeping the ball, not turning it over. I mean, they're still turning it over some. I mean, Ingram's fumbled a couple times, but generally speaking, they're holding on to the ball really, really well.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit about ample time and space. Lamar did not have a great ample time and space game in this, despite the fact the offensive line scored well. He had ample time and space, only 6 of 24 dropbacks. Just briefly, John, that's a three-second pocket where he can step into his throw, which is a very generous amount of time. It's truly ample in today's NFL, where defensive coordinators are trying to find ways to generate pressure more quickly. One of the reasons he wasn't getting ample time and space is a lot of these boots that they were running. And they have almost given up on the notion of a traditional boot. They've turned the back. The quarterback turns his back, which is normal. But then there's not even any kind of pretense of a handoff anymore on two of the boots they did in this game, which is really strange because the Ravens, of course, for 15 years or even longer, have run the same tired old zone block left, naked boot right, where they hand off
play action,
hand off either six or seven guys are basically leading that fake left. And then you're left with, it used to be Flacco, but now it's Jackson to make a play at one of three levels. And now it's just like, we'll just get our other running back out to be an additional receiving option because Lamar can avoid any one player coming after him. And so they're being much more brazen about how they use that boot now. I'm loving it, frankly, because the boot with Flacco, they were very onto it, particularly in the divisional games.
Oh boy, were they onto it. So yeah, I had seen enough of those. Anything that's new, this offense needed. I mean, it is truly a breath of fresh air. I don't want to dump on Joe. You know, Joe did a lot of great things, and I was a fan of his in many respects, but I mean, you know, we could do a whole show over the change of the offense this year and what's going on. And every time I watched the Broncos this year, I felt like I was seeing things that I'd seen the last 4 or 5 years here. You know, it was right. Not all positive, was not positive. And so I'm fine with these changes they're making. They're exciting and they're taking advantage. Roman, they're taking advantage of what they have in this quarterback. So, you know, it's a different thing. I mean, Joe brought some things to the table. But I think the Ravens are delighted to be where they are now with him and just a whole new set of plays.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think Roman is hopefully, well, he should get a lot of the credit. I'm afraid that they're going to lose him and possibly Martindale both. They'll certainly both be on short lists for head coaching opportunities.
Yeah.
Or, you know, potentially lucrative assistant or, you know, coordinator roles elsewhere. You know, you never know when Dan Snyder is going to go ballistic and pay double what anybody's paid for a defense coordinator previously to Wink Martindale.
Well, that's true. That's true. I would be surprised to see them leave on that situation unless if Dan Snyder comes in with an offer like that, yeah. But more likely to be a head coaching job, I would think. And I don't know. Will it be this year? It's possible. I mean, I certainly don't see Greg Roman as the offensive coordinator. Coordinator here for the next 5 years. I mean, something's going to happen. And this is a real testament to him. So I would enjoy it now while all the pieces are lined up very nicely right now. And you got to make the most of that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So one of the things I like to do with the ample time and space is when you have it, you have a different expectation than when you don't. In this case, 124 expected yards for Jackson for his opportunity set of 18 not ample time space and 6 ample, and his actual was 162 in this game net, so plus 38 in the game. That's a solid one. I think it might be his second best game of the season. He's plus 204 against Miami, which is the highest I've ever recorded. So, you know, he's not going to beat that again, but it's a fine game if he can regularly go plus 38. And that's relative to a Flacco standard, by the way, from 2010 to 17.
Interesting. Yeah. So he's basically making the most out of or getting more out of the situation, you know, whatever it may be. And that doesn't surprise me. I mean, just, you know, take away all the numbers and, you know, how many times do you see him just create something out of nothing? You
yeah.
know? And I think that's what you're referring to.
Yeah. We saw him do something he's done a little bit. Pretty much through since he's gotten here, which is short arm a ball, unfortunately, the one on the right sideline to Ingram, where it looked like he was outside the pocket. Ingram looked open, 15 yards maybe if he'd have caught the ball on the sideline there. I did look at the coach's film. It actually looked a little bit tighter in terms of the defense around him. So they might have lost less than what looked like a fairly open field run by Ingram, but it was still going to be a big gain. And it was good to see him just immediately take responsibility for that.
That's not a problem with him. I mean, yeah. That's the beauty of Lamar is for a guy with so much talent, getting so much done, the really incredible thing that I've observed of him, he knows he's good. He obviously knows he's good, but he doesn't have a huge ego. I mean, if you, after the Green Bay exhibition game this summer, when he made that crazy video game move that everybody talked about, he was asked to describe it. After the game, he was really incapable of describing it. He was like, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm just playing. And then he would rather talk. He threw a pick in that game, I think. And he's like, well, I want to talk about that. So, and it's genuine. You know, he's much easier talking about what he's not doing well than what he does do well. And I can tell you that, you know, in the high offices of the castle, what they're really down on their knees praying is that this young man doesn't change, because he is really, they love what they have right now with him in terms of those things. I'm talking about things you don't see. Mm-hmm. And they just hope that that continues, because he is really good at being accountable and being a teammate. And like Joe, not throwing teammates under the bus. And they're just hoping that continues.
Well, he's certainly much easier to build an offense around a guy like that who takes responsibility personally and is affable and easy to follow. And it is a great situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of lost in the shuffle of what's happening in Cleveland.
Yes.
where it's continually compared. And, you know, listen, I'm a Baker Mayfield fan. I think he's a tremendous talent. But, I mean, there's things going on there where, you know, coachability issues, I think, are starting to rise a little bit. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not close to that team. I don't know. But it's whatever is happening, it's the opposite of it is happening here.
Hey, one of the things interesting about the Baker Mayfield thing, we've all seen the video and him looking like whether it was John Candy or one of the Wet Bandits or the guy on South Park. I mean, he's being compared to everyone right now. But the funny thing about it to me was this. He was playing that game, or at least he arrived, and he still had his beard. And after the game, he shaved to look like that. So one of a couple things happened. Either one, he lost a bet and said, if we lose this game, I'm going to shave my beard kind of thing, which is possible. Or number two is he decided he wanted to be a different person at the podium or whatever, but he shaved after the game apparently. And it's just the weirdest thing for him to show up on the podium with that. And by the way, if you go over to the Cleveland message boards, I didn't pick up on this. They picked up on it. And I cannot come up with an understanding of, wow, you lose a game like that to the Broncos, a terrible team, even if it's on the road. And your first concern before you head to the podium is your facial hair.
Yeah, and bad decision making there too, I might add.
Yes.
So I don't know. It is a bad situation up there, and I mean, yeah, stuff like that going on. Meanwhile, you got your safety going off on Twitter so badly that you got to cut him. And I mean, these are things that get magnified when you lose. Not the Twitter thing. I mean, that was just totally uncalled for, but. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what's going to happen up there, but with six losses, they're already in big, big trouble. And I'll be interested to see whether they certainly have talent on that team, whether they can pull it back together, maybe beat the Steelers once, that, you know, I don't think the Ravens would mind that, but see whether they can keep playing.
Yeah, I think at this point, these Ravens certainly got to be hoping for a split between those two. I guess they still have two games left, right? Yeah.
Yes, they do.
All right. So the main question I want to ask you, because you maybe have your the pulse of the media better than I do, certainly, is Lamar a reasonable MVP candidate at this point? There are other players certainly with better numbers, like Russell Wilson. Is he an MVP candidate under some other argument?
I would say he is not the top tier. He's not the top guy. Certainly Russell Wilson, I think, is the top guy. I mean, he threw 5 touchdown passes the other day. And he's going to be on this was just to explain to me, he's going to be on national television a bunch coming up. And, you know, I think it's all lined up for him. You know, he's just having a tremendous year. You know, I would think he would be the favorite. I think McCaffrey in Carolina is just, I mean, those are record-setting numbers that he's doing. I mean, Lamar, yes, he is in the conversation is how I'm carefully writing it. I would say he is not the favorite, but, you know, I mean, that's fine.
He's a similar player to Wilson, not identical by any stretch, because Lamar really does run for a lot of yardage and Wilson does not. But because Wilson is a threat to run and you have to spy him, or most teams do either spy him or they freeze their edge defenders, they have similarities. But if you're going to make the argument for Lamar, at least if I were going to make the argument for Lamar, I'd be pointing to the fact that his skills, even when not used, make the other players around him a lot better in terms of that downhill run game.
Yeah. I mean, Lamar, it isn't all about Lamar with this team. It is about Mark Ingram. I mean, on a normal, you know, here we've got this great running game going and he had this great game. He had a great game the other night. Mm-hmm. And it's like storyline number 16. no one's talking about it. And he wore them out. And but that's a function of Lamar. And so he does make guys better. And I don't know. I don't think he'll end up being MVP. But if they go on and have a really, really strong year, the Ravens, I mean, it could get interesting. He's a popular guy. You know, some of this stuff is popularity contest. He's got 1.2 million Instagram followers. And you don't know how people will be convinced. Lamar's doing a lot of things right, so he belongs in that conversation. Going back to what we talked about before, with great, you know, no fumbles lost, and so he's playing some great football. I think it'd be tough to make him the MVP, but not impossible.
Right. Well, since Lamar started, and he obviously started at the end of last year, and now the first 8 games of this year, he started 15 games for the Ravens during the regular season. During those games, the Ravens have 3,246 rushing yards. Yeah, that's in 15 games. The all-time record, point of comparison, for a 16-game season is held by the Patriots with 3,165 yards in 1978. So actually, they'd beaten it by halftime, and in 14 and a half of Jackson's starts, they'd eclipsed the 16-game NFL record. They are not a sure thing, I don't think, to beat that record, by the way, this year, because they're only about 113 yards above pace, and they've got some tougher games coming up. And one of the things that helps you with that kind of record is being able to cruise to the finish line in these games the way they have. So, you know, they've got to have 7 to 10-point leads fairly regularly down the stretch, and I think that'll be more difficult for them with their remaining schedule than the teams they've played so far.
That's interesting. The 78 Patriots.
Mm-hmm. So Steve Grogan at quarterback.
Who?
Steve Grogan was at quarterback. How old are you, John, just so I know?
63.
Okay, so I'm 56. So we grew up with some of the same football, and football of the 70s, we overlapped.
Yes.
So Steve Grogan was the quarterback for the Patriots who first challenged the Colts of the Jones era.
Yeah.
And then they had we used to call him Sam Bam Cunningham, but that's it. Sam Cunningham. He was the leading rusher. Nobody had over about 800 yards on that team, but they still rushed for 3,165 as a unit. They had a bunch of running backs.
Wow. Is that Ron Meyer?
I think might have been.
Ron Meyer.
I can't tell you who was the coach at that point. Yeah.
Might have been. I covered Ron Meyer as a college coach at SMU, the Mustang, the Pony Express that they did the 30 on. So, yeah.
So that's I know he had time up there. I think it may have been. I'm not sure.
So Houston, were you there when Houston ran up the big game on SMU?
No, I was there for Eric Dickerson and Craig James and Lance McElhinney, and you know, they were you know, it was a very high payroll. And no, I was there. I covered them in the, let's see, it would be the early 80s.
Okay. All right. That's great. Certainly one of the really interesting stories of all time is them coming off the death penalty and get beaten 95-21 by Houston, I think it was, during the Andre Weir era. Do I have the right?
Yeah. I was pre-death penalty with them. We're doing all the stuff that got them the death penalty.
So that's what you meant by the high payroll.
Yeah. It was a very interesting time.
All right. There's another interesting Patriots fact coming into this game. The Patriots and the Ravens were 1-2 in the league in terms of plus snaps per game. So the Pats had outsnapped their opponents by 14 snaps per game, which, by the way, ridiculous number, and the Ravens by 13.9. Prior to the Seattle game, they were plus 18 for the Ravens. So they'd come down to 13.9. But wouldn't you know it, these two league-leading offensive juggernauts ran it to a 65-65 tie in terms of snap count in this game, largely due to the fact that they lost the drive, quote-unquote, to Humphrey's fumble return.
Whoa, so same snap count, exactly.
65, yep.
Isn't that interesting? But the Ravens had the ball for, what, 14 more minutes, something like that.
Yeah. I'm a big believer that it's the number of snaps you run that really drain the effort of the defense. So I love, you know, you need to get rid of the clock to close out a game. And I want to talk about that in just a second. But I'm a big believer that if you're trying to get a defense tired, it's actual snap count that's the more important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think both defenses had a little span in that game when they were tired.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this was the you mentioned that this is the third straight game where they put away an opponent with a fourth quarter drive of 9+ minutes. Three straight games, unheard of, frankly. Yeah. And they weren't touchdowns; it's field goal, touchdown in this case. But they've only had 16 such drives at any point during a game in their entire history. And for the last three games, they've had one in the fourth quarter to close out the game.
Wow. That I mean, very honestly, I mean, that's I mean, they're not going to do it every week, obviously. They're not going to come close, but that is a killer instinct, and that is championship caliber football. You know, you can't say that everything they're doing is that, but that is, if you can't, you know, have opponent right there and just put them down and sort of end the game. That's great stuff. I mean, that is how you get far in the season and maybe deep in the playoffs. And so I am sure that John Harbaugh and his group is loving that. But a little bit of help is never hurts. And the Patriots certainly helped with one of those drives with penalties. A couple of third down penalties that it drives. They did that. I believe the Ravens got four first downs by penalty in that game. And that is a very high number and a shocking number from the Patriots, who are famous for not beating themselves. Very definitely beat themselves in some respects in this game. So, but nonetheless, credit to the Ravens for doing
it. You know, this is something where I think a lot of the rest of the nation, in fact, 31 other fan bases, are happy to see the Patriots get stuck this way pretty much. Maybe not the Steelers. Maybe they're one of the others that doesn't. But for Brady to be knocked down 10 times in a game and have zero flags thrown, the rest of the NFL is saying it's about freaking time.
Yeah. And he was calling for it early in the game. He definitely was. He was chatting up the refs big time early in the game. And then he stopped. He stopped the third quarter, second half. I didn't see him doing that a whole lot. And he got hit a lot. And I'm sure the Ravens are thrilled about that. I mean, they, you know, they hit him legally. You never know what they're going to call, but there's no doubt. I'm sure the fan bases were thrilled to see that. Thrilled to see Belichick over on that sideline grousing. They don't know, you know, who knows what he's grousing about. But it wasn't going his way. And you know, the guy jumps offside. Have a 4-point offside penalty there on the first drive of the game. Just infuriated him. I mean, he was livid over there. I don't believe you can put whatever he was mouthing. You know, they slowed down the slow-mo not pretty, but you know what he was saying. But very unusual for the Patriots, and so they, you know, I don't know that you give the Ravens credit for that, but they were definitely off their feet a little bit.
Yeah, they, you know, one thing you never see, and head coaches will often talk about this when they move up from coordinator to head coach, is that they're going to keep their eyes on the field in their new role. The coordinators are going to be responsible for offense, for defense, for whatever. Of course, the Patriots have a little bit different situation. Bill Belichick went into that defensive sideline huddle while the Patriots offense was on the field. Now, he knows it's in good hands with McDaniels and with Brady. It's probably fine. But he went in there and he dressed those guys down in terms of what they've done to get down 17-0 in that game. And that was really something to see in terms of the Patriots, you know, getting told what's up from the boss.
Well, it is. I mean, they are amazing. My, you know, everybody hates them here, and I get it, and they do drive you nuts. They are amazing to watch. Yeah, even in defeat, you see things like that. I mean, that's interesting to watch. Belichick, probably the greatest coach ever, just go in there and light those guys up. I mean, Tom Brady at 42 in that game was pretty. I mean, he didn't have a great game, and he was under a lot of duress, but he certainly ran that no huddle. That was a thing of beauty for a lot of the night, and you can see why they're so good. You know, they held their, like we were talking earlier, held their gaps on the defensive rush. I mean, they're just so well coached. But you know, they slipped up. There were some slip ups in that game, and it really cost them. And you know, they're human. That's the way it goes. So one thing I noticed: the Baltimore fans, nobody left. No one left, because how many nights are you going to be at a game on national television and watch your team beat the snot out of the New England Patriots? And so everybody stayed to enjoy every minute of that.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great night. I certainly had lost my voice by the end of the night. Very fun to be there. You watched the game, I assume, from the press box, John, or do you have other seats?
Press box.
Okay, so you're restricted in terms of how you can behave there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, what's the famous book? No cheering in the press box.
Yeah. I used to do pitch-by-pitch scoring for Stats, Inc. years ago, and that was one of the things. I did forget where I was once and said something about Bill Ripken, you know, in a very positive way, and got a lot of eyeballs at the time anyway.
Well, baseball press boxes are very, very heavily governed places, as you know. You know, they don't look kindly on that stuff. Football is actually a little easier going, but baseball for sure. No, you know, don't even think about it.
Yeah. All right. So maybe we go through a few other skill position players here, take a few minutes with this. Pick them out one at a time who you'd like to talk with. But why don't you pick a player and we'll add a little back and forth on him.
Do you want me to pick one?
Sure.
All right, well, let's talk about Ingram. As I said, he was the 16th highest, 16th storyline coming out of that game. You know, I think what's interesting about him is his role continues to expand a little bit. You know, I've written it several times. I feel like he was a little underutilized, I think, in the first 5 or 6, 7 games. Really like what he's bringing to the table. He's running hard. And, you know, I don't have the next gen stats in front of me, but he's always a great yards after contact guy. And just runs so tough. He is really what the Ravens are all about. And they were throwing to him the other night. And I like that. He's got good hands. He can really do anything on the football field. He's a good blocker. And I just think when they signed him, I mean, I was pretty happy with the Gus last year. And mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of fun to watch. And I felt kind of badly for Gus, and they bring this guy in. But I get it entirely while they brought him. He's a really good football player, a well-rounded football player, and has a lot to do with what's happening with the Ravens right now.
I really love how they used him as a receiver in this game. And he caught 2 of 3 balls for 29, but he made those plays with yards after the catch. And we talked earlier about the one ball that Jackson short-armed and actually overthrew him in this particular case down the right sideline. That's the first target that he has not caught all year. He's 14 of 15 targets caught. He'd gone 4 straight games where he'd only gotten a total of 34 yards receiving. So the Ravens hadn't been utilizing him in their receiving game. To see him come back in that way is good. Really good to see him, you know, keep running the ball effectively even after the fumble. That was a very costly fumble, obviously, in the game. The Patriots did not do much on a long field, no huddle or not. They did not do much on a long field against the Ravens because they didn't have any big playability in that game and no willingness, just like Jackson, to really go down the field into the teeth of the Ravens secondary. So they only had two plays over 18 yards. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't test them downfield at all. It really appeared to me that they don't feel they have the weapons to do that. I don't know what's going on, but of course, that's the New England offense. I mean, they've done it in the Super Bowl. They've done it in all sorts. And you just watch those crossing routes, and Brady's a master at that stuff, and he'll hit that pass. He'll hit 25 in a row, but they're not challenging you. So, I think in a game like this, they looked a little old and tired, very honestly, I think, a little offensively.
Yep, couldn't agree more. Let me pick a player next. I'll talk about Chris Moore, because a lesser-known player, obviously, had a little bit of a blow-up this week. He'd been on the field more offensively in previous games, not as much as last year when he was really used a lot as a run blocker and was effective when used as a receiver. The guy, I got to say, it's kind of a sad story, not an uncommon story for the NFL. In his fourth year, is not getting a lot of playing time. He knows it. He wants to, earn a contract somewhere next year. I think the Ravens would love for him to stay, or they'd wish the best for him. Obviously, he goes, and for lots of reasons. But, unfortunately, he's just not getting the opportunities given the couple rookies they brought in. And even his special teams role does not seem to be as big as it has been in the past.
I would agree. He's not making the plays like he did. I don't know. I think that's two different things. I think, first of all, as a receiver, this is just sort of my inclination. I think the Ravens made the judgment before this season that, he's a number four guy. He is not going to be a guy that you're going to put on the field. He just wasn't consistent enough, I think, bringing in pass. He just wasn't consistent enough. Making plays, catching the ball, certainly an athletic guy and fast, but they made that judgment. And you're just seeing now, that's part of the reason they drafted two receivers. They felt like the depth chart was a little bit empty. And so, you have to have, this is a tight end based offense. There's no when it comes to receivers. So maybe you need your wide receivers a little less, but, it's unfortunate for Chris, and he isn't doing as much on special teams this year. So I don't know. It's a little surprising to me, but, at this point, I would say if you'd asked me at the beginning of the year, I'd say, yeah, that's a guy they can bring back as a towards the bottom of the depth chart receiver and a good special teams player, but I'm just not seeing as much of the special teams this year. So yeah. I don't know what his future is here.
Right. If they did bring him back, just hypothesizing, the kind of contract they'd want to bring him back on is the kind of contract they've been able to sign with McClellan and Levine and players like that, where they'd sign him for, 2 years, $3 million kind of thing. I don't know if there's a better deal out there for him, but I think if I were Chris Moore or Chris Moore's agent, I'd want him to take a flyer somewhere at 1 year for maybe even the minimum salary, take a little bit less money to get a chance to play receiver.
Yeah, I would agree totally with that. I don't think it's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. So if he has hopes, if he harbors any hopes, it's going to be somewhere else.
All right. Your turn. Pick another player.
Another player. Let's talk about Pat Ricard. Pat Ricard is blowing my mind what they're doing with him. The role that the bigger role that he's got on offense now is just incredible. And using him, and I know you've charted it, they're using him in a number of different ways. It just seems he's on the field a lot. And he seems to be more of an offensive player than a defensive player now. They're using him to block. It has a lot to do with the physical style that they're playing. I think they like what he brings to the table. And, he certainly looked athletic catching that ball out in the flat and running. Definitely added stuff there, too. So
how cool was that to see him not be willing to go down, even though there are four Patriots on him? They blew the whistle. The Patriots went away. And then he's, ripping the football loose, and then he wants to go over and hand it to the official. It's like he hasn't had the ball enough, obviously, to know what the normal protocols are with that. But that was just very impressive. I saw that. I'm on the sideline. I'd want to be getting him another reception or two, which might have been part of the deal there. But Very exciting player. You know what's really interesting here, I thought, was more. The Ravens went very light on defense in this game, and Patrick Ricard was their fourth defensive lineman for this game, which is a big risk to take against a team which might hold the ball a lot on you. You're going to have to play the same defensive lineman, you know, a large number of snaps. Ricard still, even with this, did not play many defensive snaps this game. I think it was four against the Patriots. And let me just confirm that for a second. Yeah, four snaps. So it wasn't like he was on the field a lot, but he certainly was on the field offensively, and it gives you basically a pulling guard every time he's in motion, even though he's not playing guard.
Between Ricard and Boyle, and I think Boyle, I think Boyle, in terms of snaps, I don't have it in front of me, but he was on the field a ton in that game, Nick Boyle. And so you've got Boyle and Ricard out there. It's like having seven linemen.
Yes, it's exactly like that. Yeah.
And so that tells you everything that you need to know about what the Ravens are doing.
Okay, so Boyle with 59 snaps of 70, they ran offensively, and Ricard with 27. So between the two of them, they played 123% of the snaps. So it's 1.23 snaps per play.
That is a lot. And meanwhile, I think the other tight ends, if I'm not mistaken, Andrews, he didn't play. He played maybe 25 snaps.
24. And, yeah, he comes in to receive the football. So he's in there on passing downs to make a catch. Yeah.
Right. And so it's just, you know, 50-59 for Boyle. I mean, Boyle and Ricard, that's just that's. You know, that's the strong arm football that they're playing when they have both those guys out there. You know, I'm amazed. I mean, here we're talking about Chris Moore, a guy who stars falling, you know, Ricard's is rising big time. And I think they love what he brings to the table.
Yeah. All right. All right. I'll pick one more and we can. Justice Hill was a guy I thought would get more of a chance in this game just because his speed and ability to get into space, maybe make a reception. Hill hadn't had a reception in quite some time. And the only target he got in this game was after the very extensive scramble by Lamar that ended up by the right sideline, threw the ball all the way down on the right sideline, and Hill was just out of bounds, you know, didn't have a shot at the football. That to me was a shame. I mean, obviously, this is a game where if you want to do one thing, it's use your speed against the Patriots' very modest athleticism and team speed that they have in levels 2 and 3. You know, you don't want to test their secondary with ball skills, but you do want to test their secondary speed and their linebacker speed. And they didn't do a lot of that. They didn't do as much as they could have. It's a game where they scored 37. It's hard to really get down on the offense too much, but if they wanted to do one thing differently, it would have been to use Hill and Boykin a little bit more in space.
Yeah, definitely, but I don't see it happening a whole lot. And Hill's you know, snap count is not very high, and I don't know. It definitely has not come together for him yet this year. He had the one game, I can't remember, was it Pittsburgh, I think, where he had 9 or 10 carries. It wasn't Pittsburgh, but I can't remember which game, but he did have a decent load. I felt like they were determined to get him going. It was a home game, and I can't remember which one.
Yeah, in the opener against Miami, he had 7 for 27. He had 5 for 31 against Cincinnati. So it hasn't been much, 21 carries on the year now.
No, so I think you're looking in, I don't know, second half of the season, maybe he'll start to carry it more. I'm not sure that we're going to see a ton of that. Maybe we will. I don't know. But if anything, I think Ingram's load may go up a little bit. They got some tough games coming up. I think they're really happy with Gus Edwards as the number two. And they don't want to, if anything, they want him to get the ball more. So he'll maybe getting squeezed out a little bit here, even though he has a different skill set and brings to the table the speed that you want. You know, the productivity is another thing. And it's a situation where you'd like to have two footballs and you don't. So some things get squeezed out. And that could be the case here. I don't know. I just haven't seen it happening yet. And I'm not 100% sure it will.
Yeah, I agree. And oftentimes the third string running back gets his opportunity with injury. And it hasn't happened, obviously, here. So if that were to occur, then I'm sure Hill would get plenty of carries. And you know, he'd be used. And we'd really see what we have. And
He's talented. He is a very talented young man. I mean, he does you can see it in practice. And so, it's just a matter of sort of governing that until you maybe start to show it on the field.
All right. Well, let's look at the Ravens season a little bit further here. And where do you see them? Where do they fit among the AFC contenders from your point of view now?
I would say, I was shocked. I was looking at a graphic on TV. I think, and they're currently the number two seed, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's only six winning teams in the AFC right now. And, you know, those six would be in the playoffs. And that was a little surprising to me. So it's not a huge upper class in the AFC because that is a class that includes Buffalo. I think it's, I'm not sure about them. The Ravens are certainly right there with, the Patriots. I mean, to me, the best teams in the AFC, the Patriots certainly are. The Chiefs, especially when Mahomes is healthy, I think will be right there as well. And I think the Ravens are with those guys. I think that they can, I think the Texans, you also have the Houston Texans, I think are maybe a step back, but they'll come in here and play in a couple of weeks. So they'll get the test of their mettle. But those would be the teams I think that would be the ones, and the Ravens belong in that crew. There's no question about it. I mean, they haven't had the Chiefs here yet. And after you've beaten the Patriots as soundly as they did, there's no doubt it would be a different game in New England. But, hey, they played up there enough. You know, this time it was here, and that's the way it goes. So I think the Ravens are for real. I think that they can play with these teams, and they're right there with the best.
Well, you've been, I'm sure, to those four playoff games in New England. I was there, of course, as well. And those games, the Ravens handled the Patriots pretty handily in all four games, in fact. The Patriots were very lucky to get out of there with two wins among those four games that include the Lee Evans and Cundiff game and include the two 14-point comebacks in 2014, the deflated football gate that was going on at that time. And then the Ravens, handed them their rear ends pretty badly in the 2009 game and again in the 2012 AFC Championship. So I personally, as a fan, don't have any fear that the Ravens going up to New England and playing will face any significant differences. I mean, the Patriots, if I look at the no huddle they ran here in Baltimore, I'm saying if they can do it in that noise, they can run the no huddle anywhere. And the Ravens completely handled it under those circumstances. So yeah. They were able to make the substitutions they needed. They were able to get the blitz packages in that they needed. Very complex set. I think they're perfectly capable of being. The team I'm more afraid of is the Chiefs in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's a tough game. They're already 0-2 there with Lamar, and that's a tough place to play. Very loud, great fans. And, so it comes down to seeding and winning some of these games and maybe getting some games here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the number two seed is a lovely thing to shoot for. I think the Patriots in the end will be the number one probably again. I mean, they just don't. Yeah, I mean, they've already played the Jets twice, I think. They have some tougher games, but they're going to be tough to catch just generally. And the Ravens have some tough games too. But you get that number two seed, boy, that's a game changer. You know, you only have to win one game at home to get to the conference championship game. That's a great thing. And plus, maybe we get Kansas City here instead of there.
Yeah.
So I think the bye is worth the is something. I do think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but I think the bye is a great goal for this team.
Right. I'm actually very concerned that the Steelers could still win the division and the Ravens would be traveling there. But anyway, it is what it is, and we'll see how it goes. Josh, how are we doing for mailbag questions tonight?
All right. We've got a few questions here in the mailbag. Again, this is a chance for the listeners to drive the show by using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag on Twitter to get your questions in. And we're going to start it off with Spencer, who says, you often mention that the Ravens' run game is right-handed, but both Ingram's 53-yarder and then the touchdown by Gus both went to the left. Is that something they've been working on, or is it a wrinkle that they were throwing at the Pats?
Okay, there's a couple of things going on here. Okay, the right-handedness means that they usually line up their tight end on the strong side over there, and they run their power run, which is usually the pulling guard. It usually goes from left to right. So that's what I'm referring to when I say it's right-handed. The Ravens run a lot of misdirection off that. So now they use this bash concept where they pull both the left tackle and the left guard. And the times we have seen that, they've been running left just as often as they've been running right. They, in fact, had Edwards had a 25-yard run a couple weeks ago where it was run left opposite the pull of the left tackle and left guard. So there's some stuff going on like that. Ingram also picks his cutback lane. And I'm trying to remember the case in the 53-yard run exactly where he cut through the line. But I don't think it was all the way at left tackle. I think it was maybe over the A gap on the left side. I'd really have to look at the film again to make sure I'm knowing what where he was on that play.
All right. All right, Alex, we're going to go with his question. The Ravens offense seemed to be moving the ball and holding the ball at will on Sunday. His question is, what Pat's defensive look was the most successful at containing the Ravens offense?
That's interesting. I'm not really sure I'm qualified to opine on that.
They're talking about like cover two as opposed to cover zero, or, you know.
Right. Like, is there something that the Patriots did that was good at stopping Lamar? And I guess you can even expand it to the storyline that's going around social media since Sunday night about how Belichick held back and didn't show all the tricks up his sleeve to try to win this game.
He showed us the biggest trick of all, that they're old and slow. That's the biggest trick of all that the Patriots have. But it's an interesting question because, John, I don't know how you feel about this, but one of the things I've been harping on kind of this last week leading up to the game was that the Patriots are a system team. Yeah. They're a team with a lot of middle-aged football players, and Lawrence Guy is a good example. Great guy, good player while he was with the Ravens, but he's a system player. He's not an individual, unique talent. And if he's your stud lineman, like Collinsworth was referring to them, across that line, I mean, they've got a bunch of journeymen basically playing with great scheme to get good results.
It is sort of a no-name defense, you know, the old standby. So the names don't knock you out at all. They just play so well. They're so smart. I for the record, am not a believer at all in this conspiracy theory that Belichick held something back. I would say this. What was it? What did he hold back? I mean, what, some blitz package? What would it be? Some other, I mean, they threw like five different coverages. What's left? I mean, they shot two different spies at Lamar. They threw a lot at him. I would have serious doubts about the fact it's like, you know, he's over in the corner there with the double secret, whatever he's got. I'm sorry, not a buyer.
Yeah, they did not have any two-man drops from the line of scrimmage. That's one of the elements of deception I look from the pass rush. But I don't record their blitzes and stunts separately. I just know from some of the ones that got missed, I've got that written in here. They tried to run at that A-gap, the Ravens A-gap on the left side, to try and take advantage of Skura and Bozeman on some of their blitz packages. I think they did a fair amount of probing there. It's really hard for me to get behind that theory. And I even wonder if this is coming from a Patriots fan trying to figure out, you know, what we saw from this game, or if we're just, you know, going to be bullheaded about how dominant the Ravens are. I think, you know, the Patriots have amazing scheme, and we saw last year in the playoff game against the Chargers, it can change with a different scheme the second time around. I just don't know how it will completely change with the personnel the Patriots have the second time around.
Yeah, and even if it does change, it's like it wasn't like they, the first time around, they said, oh, this would really work. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. It's like, I'm sorry. These NFL doesn't work that way. These teams would not do that.
Well, Patriot fans are not used to their team getting just punched in the mouth in a surprise like Sunday, so they've got to come up with something to talk about it. Next question up is, how has Lamar's read progressions improved? You mentioned the ample time and space and giving him time back there, but have you noticed an improvement in his reads?
Okay, so there's a couple levels of reads which I look at. First of all, they had a ton of read option football. They doing this. You can't just look at the passes, but the read option plays, I thought he did an exceptional job of making the choice to pull or leave the ball for the running back. I think that went very well. In terms of going through receivers, he gets rid of the ball fairly quickly. I think he's probably a little faster at processing the field than Joe Flacco was. And it may also have been that Joe Flacco had a different order of reads he was going through. But one of the things to really kind of key on if you're questioning the reads is how often does he throw to the same receiver? And there still is some of that we see with Jackson and very, very commonly going to Mark Andrews.
Yep. Andrews and Hollywood a little bit. Yeah. But when he's healthy and on the field. For what it's worth, though, this I have heard around the building. I mean, the Ravens are delighted. And this is not just a function of him playing better this year. They were delighted last year with his ability to see the field and make reads. And long before he was playing, long before he was the regular, they felt like that is a skill he brought to the table. That I don't know if they expected that or they thought they were drafting that, but certainly Marty Morningwig was aware of it, you know, and the fans have a lot of fun with Marty, and he's the vanquished coordinator. He does know a lot of football. Mm-hmm. And very early on was willing to tell people, privately, you know, we've got something here because this kid can see the field. It just happens naturally. And better than Joe, I would say yes. I would say they feel like it is better. I'm not meaning to bash Joe here, but I think they feel like it's an advantage. Lamar on that situation. It's just the skill that he's got.
All right. I
promised somebody we'd get to Miggy's question here. Do you have it there?
Miggy's question is the next one up.
Okay.
I've got two more I want to finish up with, and Miggy is the second to last question, who he is wondering about Skura. So he's wondering if it's wise to extend Skura this offseason, and if using a second round tender would represent too high of a risk to lose him to a team looking to add a reliable veteran.
Okay, I'll answer the second part of this question, then John, you answer the first. A second round tender will scare off anyone. No one is going to sign Skura if they put a second round tender, which means they pay him $3 million. To me, it seems like the path of least resistance to use for next year. What do you think about it, John, in terms of an extension after 3 years instead of four?
He would be, I think, a pretty good candidate there. I feel like he's sort of answering the question, can he be our center on a good offense? And it appears to be, he's done everything they've asked of him, and go back to these things we said earlier about how the offensive line appears to be a pretty well-run unit right now. He has a hand in that. So I think, yeah, it's possible, and it may not break the bank. So
yeah.
I love those extensions that don't break the bank.
Right. That really is the key there. Could they get him for a deal that'd be similar to what Hurst maybe made, which was 4 years, $17 million? I think it would probably be there or a little bit less. It'd be an early thing. And if he might be giving up some money, because if he goes through, bets on himself, plays the fourth year, has a good year, he could easily get 4 years, $28 million, $30 million somewhere else.
Yeah, he could. I don't know. I would easy for me to say, but I might be, that would be a pretty good deal, though, on the table and extension. Some of these guys want to take these things. It's money in the bank. But he would be a candidate for it for sure.
And then, John, you've dealt with a lot of players. So Matt Skura is probably not living in a house in the top neighborhood in the entire Owings Mills area or wherever. He's probably living in, you know, a modest life at this point. A lot of people don't realize just how tenuous his football career is at this point in terms of how much money he's going to earn at this game.
Well, yeah, I mean, this second contract's a huge thing. I mean, and you come in as an undrafted free agent, that sets your level, and you live with that through your first contract. So, like with Hurst, you know, a couple years ago, that second contract is everything. It's mm-hmm. everything. And so, far be it from me or from anyone to say, you know, take less. You want to max out. That is his opportunity.
Right. And it really is. And he'll probably only get one opportunity if he goes on and you know, plays a few more years in the league and in fact gets another extension. It'll just, he'll beaten the odds by even more to do it that way. But he is the kind of player, I think, he'd be sharp enough to realize it might be time to not bet everything on my fourth year.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's a decent extension. I don't know. I can't walk in the shoes of these guys that get offered this kind of money. You know, just who I am, I'd say, well, I think I'll take that. So, I don't know.
All right. All right, Ken, you mentioned where linemen are living in their houses, which gives me a chance to tell John I'd really like a story on Bradley Bozeman's home, because I learned this week that he doesn't live in a house. He lives in like a fifth wheel trailer because they got tired of paying rent.
That is news to me. You're breaking news to me.
Wow.
There. I will investigate that. And
he was on Glenn Clark Radio this week, him and Nikki talking about it. But let's close out the mailbag with about Marquise Brown. And this guy's wondering, do you think Marquise has been sacrificing yardage in order to avoid hits after catches? Because you saw that twice in the Patriots where he caught the ball and kind of went towards the sideline.
I did. I noticed it the first time on the fairly late in the game where he took about a yard loss, but I had the same feeling. You know what? Watching punt returns growing up back in the 70s, there would often be a punt returner who would go 2 or 3 yards back to try and bubble past the defense, and it didn't seem to work very often. When it does work, it's a lot of yards. When it doesn't work, it looks stupid, and it looks like the guy doesn't want to take a hit. In Hollywood Brown's case, I don't want him to take a hit. Like Jackson, he's too important to the Ravens to the offense to be out there on the field.
Yeah, that was kind of extreme case of avoiding hit the other night, a couple of them, and that's a guy that he is avoiding those hits, and I'm actually okay with it. Just sort of observing him and ear to the ground out there. You know, he's playing, he's out there, he's healthy. I don't know that we're going to see him at a full go 100% all year. I think, you know, Cam Newton just went on IR with Lisfranc Frank, right? Isn't that a Lisfranc Frank foot injury, I believe? And those are serious injuries and very serious. Talk to Jimmy Smith about it. He still feels it from 2014. And I don't think Hollywood's 100%. And I think he's being very careful out there. And, you know, I hope he is next year. And he's still on pace to, I looked it up, I think close to 50 catches and 750 yards this year. That's the pace that he's on halfway through the season, close to that, I think. So that's a pretty decent year for a guy that, you know, a rookie. But I think he's doing it with a little bit of he's compromised a little bit. And I think that should govern all observations of Hollywood this year.
All right. All right, John. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm assuming our listeners are already reading your stuff over at BaltimoreRavens.com. If not, they should be. And they should go and pick up your books, The League and The Streak. I get them both on Audible. That's how I listen to The Streak. Haven't done The League yet, but it's sitting there on my phone waiting. And then they should follow you. They should follow you on Twitter at B-More Eisenberg.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that. And yeah, and check out the podcast, too. That's definitely something I've spent a lot of time on this fall and have enjoyed a lot, going back and finding some of these old guys that have, well, they're not so old, but they have interesting stories.
Yeah, it's always interesting. Football seems to have that, I guess, more than any sport, about after football, they're doing something completely different with their life.
Yeah, it is. I've learned a lot, and, you know, I've written a number of books, and I've dealt with a lot of former players, and I have a little bit of an understanding of the former player population, but it is, you know, there's so much about in the news about head injuries and head trauma and all that stuff's real. But, you know, they sort of get painted with a broad brush, some of these former players, and it just could not be farther from the truth. It is a very interesting population of sharp guys that are doing a lot of things, and it's fun to sort of dive into some of them.
Yeah, that's great. And Ken, how about filmstudybaltimore.com?
Usual stuff is out there. I want to encourage people to get in for a film study short. So if you've got a question that's too complex for the mailbag, I'll try and message you on that, or you can message me if it's something you want to present, and we'll get you on a podcast for a 10 or 15 minute segment that's all its own. We're trying to create a more digestible format that's not an hour and 15 minutes, although people love to hear us talk for that long, right, John?
That's absolutely. The more the merrier. And by the word.
All right. Well, terrific. John, couldn't appreciate more you coming on. Thanks so much. It's been a delight to talk to you about this and to talk about a specific game and weave in some of your historical understanding of this team has been a great joy.
My pleasure. Happy to come on here. Always enjoy it. So thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.